Our next speaker is Virginia Trimble from UC Irvine and LCOPT.
One of the things I have
the decade, 50 years of astronomical prioritization and predictions.
Now we need something to put over that.
Okay.
Just a piece of paper.
And here's the time.
Yeah, not that. That's what I know.
Arthur, is this?
Okay, let me say again that at the end of this session, a bunch of us will gather in that corner and say cottage for Harry Liston. Anybody who is interested, willing to participate, please do. It's quite ready.
It's all right. Okay. That's okay.
And I brought some cheat sheets and scared the book. I'm not going to tell you where Lewis Cumbrace is. I'm not going to tell you what Scientometrics is. I'm going to go back 50 years, which for many of us is just about current event rather than history, and talk about the efforts of the American Astronomical Union to prioritize its research. The first was the Pritchard Report, then there was Einstein and Field and McCall and Taylor McKee, and then there was the Blanford Report, and Roger Blanford is actually here, and will be saying something about it in a panel discussion later in the meeting. Overall success rate, specific examples, something about demographics, a few eternal verities, and many things I don't have time for. There are data on which things were successful and which were not in an objective sense, besides just, I like the VLA, I don't like Gemini. I'll say a little bit about that. But first, the overall success rate. In the first five, this is unreal. The first five decades, we asked for a little more than 100 things to be paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. We got about a third of them paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. About a third happened in Europe or Japan or with private sponsorship. About a third never happened at all. And this despite the fact that every panel said, well, we can do all this with level funding. That's one of the eternal verities. Some really major successes. We asked for the very large array, the radio telescope in New Mexico. We asked specifically the Hubble Space Telescope. We asked for and got some less successful, the very large baseline array and Gemini. We asked for, and things were done elsewhere, big optical telescopes, Keck, done by UC and Caltech. We asked for millimeter and submillimeter, and those were left to the Europeans for decades. The U.S. is just coming back with the Atacama Large Millimeter Array. This was something we asked for, and the U.S. for a very long time didn't do it. Oops. A major oops, which I'm going to spend maybe 3.5 minutes on. Nobody ever asked for the Cosmic Background Explorer in a decadal review, although that was the thing that saw both the perfect black body spectrum of the microwave radiation and its fluctuations on the sky that showed how it originated. Nobody asked for it. Nobody quite asked for the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which has been, in many ways, the most productive private instrument of the past 20 years. Asked for things and not done, big radio telescopes, radio interferometry in space. People are still thinking about that after 60 years. Southern Hemisphere Schmidt eventually done by the Brits. Now, what about COBE? Microwave background was discovered in 1965. George Gamow, whose postdocs had predicted it, didn't apparently entirely believe what had been seen. He chaired a panel, January 67, at the New York meeting of the Texas Symposium, where he said, and you must imagine the Russian accent, I can't do it. Is there anybody here from the Russian accent for us? Okay. He said, I lost a nickel. You found one. Who is to say it's the same nickel? And that was the point at which Joseph Stavsky said, Georg Antonovich, please continue in Russian, which he did. So the decadal review that came after that was the Greenstein Report from 1970. The panel main panel included three significant radio astronomers, Bernie Burke, Frank Gray, David Heesch, and also alive and well. It had one cosmologist, Jeffrey Burbidge. The radio and space panels had a number of distinguished people, some of whom are still alive and well, some of whom sadly are not. And again, one cosmologist, Jeffrey Burbidge, who was never persuaded the day he died last year that the universe went through a hot, dense phase, and so he didn't think that this three-degree cosmic radiation was of any interest. And so, of course, the panels didn't ask for serious exploration. They said, oh, well, the balloons and rockets. If you don't think something is important, you don't spend money studying it. And that, I think, has been... This perhaps is the worst example, if we just leave it at that. But we've made mistakes of that sort before. Current status. I'm not allowed to say anything bad about the Planetary Report. So I will simply tell you that the James Webb Space Telescope is in progress. The Atacama Large Millimeter is in progress. We have some high priority things. The Large Synoptic Survey Telescope is built in, looks like this. WFIRST, which is infrared in space. Gigantic segmented mirrors. The Europeans will probably get there first, but we will eventually get there. LISA, the Gravitational Wave Interferometer, International X-ray Observatory. Some of these are seriously international in the sense that the U.S. is not going to do them alone. Possibly the Europeans, Japanese, and so forth will do them without us. The SKA, the Square Kilometer Array, falls in that category as well. Other people are more interested than we are. That's okay. A word about demographics. The Whitford panel was all men, all white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, all from large private observatories or major research universities. No women, no blacks, no Hispanics, no African Americans, no Jews. As time went on, women began to creep in. Blacks crept in more slowly, Hispanics more slowly. Asian Americans very slowly. This is not peculiar to us. The Asian American fraction of American research is enormous. There are very few of them in leadership positions in our professional societies, statistically. I'm not quite sure why. The California State section of APS is going to try to remedy that by running a couple of Asian American scientists for positions as starters in our community. The present time, I think the number of women is sensible. Blacks and Hispanics are held back by the requirement that there has to be one on each panel. If you have a quota of one, you generally don't take two. People like that. The number of Jews has been strongly correlated with the ethnic backgrounds of the panel chair. Lots for Greenstein, lots for McCall, fewer other times. This lot is where they came from. Again, Whitford was all research universities and private observatories. That's still the biggest group. A few from government labs, a few from industry, and for the first time in the Blanford panel, a couple of people whose field is education and public outreach. Eternal verities. Every report has said, not enough dollars, we can do everything with the dollars we have. It's never true. Federal funding should include more ground, more optical, meaning less space, less radio. Predictions of community sizes have always been wildly optimistic. At the time of the Whitford report, there were 25 places that expected to have large astronomy graduate programs in the next 2 years, including Case Western, Northwestern, Georgetown, most of which abolished the programs they had for the next few years. Caltech and Harvard met their goals, but only much later. Costs are always underestimated, or nothing would get started. But the record is probably held by the James Webb Space Telescope, for which the number of dollars required has gone up by more than an order of magnitude, while the capabilities have gone down by some significant fraction. International collaborations. We are not very good at this, because until quite recently we didn't need to. Let me leave you with three thoughts about international collaborations. First, there is the issue of relative proportions. The two collaborators need to have some kind of balance between their lifting powers and their tasks. That's important. And the U.S. is used to being the elephant. But not the elephant being carried. The U.S. is used to being the elephant that shoves everybody else out of the way. So the proportion is important. That's why Apollo had so many good scientific spin-offs. It was so big that, you know, the crumbs from the table of Apollo came from major science. You get the relative proportion. proportions right, there's still the issue of speed and direction. The UC Irvine campus animals is anteater because we're a relatively recent campus and all the good animals were taken. UC Santa Cruz has the banana slug. And I'm not quite sure about banana slugs as collaborators for Mark. Thirdly, and this perhaps is the most important, even if you got the proportions right for collaborations and you agree about the speed and direction, you sometimes have discordant purposes. They're both going rather than in the same direction, but I think it's clear that what the cat has in mind is not quite what the goose had in mind. And a final thought, the only requirement for eventually getting there is keep going in the right direction. Unfortunately, to a certain extent, we're going some direction against a stream or against a path from Alice in Wonderland, where if you don't keep going fairly rapidly, you get dragged back. And for a good chunk of the late middle of the 20th century, the most distinguished living astrophysicist was almost certainly Chandrasekhar, Nobel Prize, Chandrasekhar Limit, editor of the Astrophysical Journal for many years. I asked him once, in a casual social encounter, why he had never been on any of these decade of surveys. Though he would almost certainly be the person who knew most broadly about all of astronomy and astrophysics. He said, no one ever asked me. And he recited a little poem called Fair Young Maid, of which the final coupling is the rich young man looking at the girl saying, "Then I cannot wed you, my fair young maid. Nobody asked you, sir," she said, and he had the proper Yorkshire accent. So, in many, many ways, the single most important part of an astronomical instrument remains the observer at the eyepiece. Even for things like Hubble Space Telescope, some of the most important things it's done have been the ideas of one person, Hubble Deep Field, for instance. And how do we make all these come out right? I don't know the answer to that, but then I've never been asked to be on one of these review committees. So there it is. Okay. I don't know what time it is, but let me stop. I think we have numbers about papers and citations at the end of the week, but I thought I would not try to show them all in here.
I think we have plenty of time for a couple.
You mentioned that Gamov didn't initially believe in the cosmic microwave background radiation.
George Gamov was apparently not fully persuaded that what Penzias and Wilson had found was what his group had predicted.
What I understand, he was also upset that Dickey in his original paper didn't reference Gamow's prediction.
Neither Penzias and Wilson nor Dickey referenced the prediction. But the prediction, of course, wasn't actually Gamow. It was Alfred Herman. Okay. And all of them are gone, but Alfred's son is still fighting that battle for recognition for his father.
Okay.
Well, Fritz Dickey's daughter is fighting for Fritz Zwicky to get recognition for things he didn't do. He was not the first to write about dark matter. It was Kapteyn a decade earlier. A different talk I'm giving 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in Baltimore after an overnight flight. Gamow, late in life, of course, was mostly interested in the genetic code, more so than in astrophysics. And he also became a bit tetchy late in life. He was good company. That Texas symposium, he took me out for a drink. And I believe I had 2, and he had 17 or thereabouts. And he sketched me as the redshift girl because I worked on the gravitational redshift in Point Force. Somewhere I still have the picture. But people, in the end, distrusting their own ideas or changing their minds isn't necessarily bad. We heard that Millikan changed his mind in the previous talk, and that Millikan changed his mind is clearly a good thing.
So, in the modern era, who's responsible for picking out the people that are on these committees?
Yet another committee in the National Academy, which in turn are picked by, well, the Academy, of course, is self-perpetuating. And if you want to be elected, you should be a prestigious institution, and you should have somebody who likes you well enough to do the paperwork. It's like prizes. That's an absolute requirement for any of the prizes. Somebody has to like you well enough to do the paperwork.
So is the committee that does the picking, does it have the similar demographic distribution as the people that they end up picking to be on the...
Yes, possibly more so. Well, you're asked to find somebody to help with something. You think of people like yourself, right? That's how I've come to be Lynn's successor in the chair sequence of the California section of APS. She's a woman astronomer, I'm a woman astronomer. We're working real hard to find somebody for the next slot who is not a woman astronomer.
But also you self-nominated.
Well, that's what we're hoping for, but so far nobody has.
Any more questions?
It's not a question, but it's a comment. Mm-hmm. About the astrophysical decadal surveys, which I think are enviable because you can organize them around these large projects and prioritize them. The support for the groups which does it is sort of just kind of built in there incidentally, and you always need more, but you don't get it, presumably. But nonetheless, you can focus on these victories. I was on decadal surveys in atomic physics over the years, and we always have this problem of trying to sell a subject which is very interesting to us, but isn't focused around large subjects, large topics. But it's one interesting fact that I have observed is that we've always missed the boat. In 1974, the decadal survey failed to mention laser spectroscopy, which was just starting then and just exploded. The one I chaired in 1983, there was not a mention of chaos in there, which then immediately exploded. In the 1995 survey, it came out just before Bose-Einstein condensation and didn't mention that. So we have this enviable history of being able to claim quite reliably that no matter what we say, it's going to be much better than we've claimed.
But I think Dr. Thunder's underlying point is that the astronomers haven't perhaps done brilliantly well, but we've done better than some of the other disciplines. Other countries are doing this kind of thing now, too. And the Australians have been very brave. The Australians have voted, in effect, to close down a couple of their enormously productive radio telescopes in order to be able to go in as part of the square kilometer array. The Brits have recently pulled out of Gemini, which is awkward for us, but wise for them because they're putting their pennies into other programs that are likely to be more productive in the future. Closing down something that exists is very hard.
Well, let's thank our speaker once again.
At the end of the session, some of us are gathering in that corner. Anybody who's willing, please join us to say cottage for Harriet's. I brought some cheat sheets.